Mike centered it.
Flame bench, there's all kinds of excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flames.
You can put it in the wind column.
Yeah, baby, yeah, baby, yeah, baby.
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Hey, happy Wednesday. It is Wednesday, October 30th. And we're underway this hour on Flames Talk with Wes Gilbertson of Post Media, the incomparable Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. Hello, Wes.
Hey, buddy.
What's going on?
Not too much. How about you?
Not much.
Big day?
Big day. And we spent the first hour of Wednesday's program celebrating and giving the proper due to Michael Backlund's 1,000th NHL game, which is part of Wednesday's game against the Utah Hockey Club in Salt Lake. By the way, if they want to keep themselves the Utah Hockey Club and not call them something else, I'd be fine with that.
Yeah, you good with it?
I preferred Washington Football Team to Washington Commanders anyway.
Yeah, I was struggling as a wordsmith, as a writer, whether it should be Utah Hockey Club or the Utah Hockey Club. These are the things I worry about on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
Are they playing against Utah Hockey Club or against the Utah Hockey Club?
You know what's easier to just say? They're playing against Utah. Or they're in Utah. They're taking on Utah.
Yeah, but I'm trying to get to a word count here, buddy.
Oh, that's fair.
Yeah.
You know what? That's a really good... Then they're taking on the Utah Hockey Club.
Yeah, the Utes.
Well, no, that's the college team.
The Utes.
The Ooks. That's Nate's team.
I give up.
Yeah, you should. On
great,
top...
Great Nate Ooks reference, though. There.
I know.
Yeah.
First ever road game I ever was a part of.
Oh, yeah?
Doing commentary at the
Trojans at Ooks?
Trojans at Ooks.
Okay.
Yep.
How'd it go?
I think the Trojans won.
Okay.
If I remember correctly. Yeah.
Did you take the morning red arrow or the evening red arrow?
No, drove up with the play-by-play guy. I was doing color on the broadcast at any sport, any time.
Okay. Yep.
It was a big deal back then.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So we got Michael Backlund's 1,000th NHL game. We've also got all kinds of, like, really interesting on-ice stuff to get to as well for Wednesday's game in Utah. The Flames have lost 3 in a row, and that seems to be specifically the 5-0 loss to Vegas a couple nights ago on Monday. That seems to be the catalyst for some significant juggling when it comes to Calgary's lineup. So this is what they are projected to look like Wednesday in Utah. 4 new forward lines, 2 new defense pairings. Dustin Wolf gets the start in net. So Michael Backlund and Blake Coleman will remain together, but Sam Honzek returns to the lineup. Honzek's missed the last 6 games as he sustained that upper body injury in Calgary's game against Chicago, or last 5 games, whatever it was. So Sam Honzek returns to action with Backlund and Coleman. Nazem Kadri with Connor Zeri and Martin Pospisil. That's how things ended in Monday's loss to Vegas. Yegor Sharangovich does indeed move to the middle with Jonathan Huberdeau on the left and Andre Kuzmenko on the right. Justin Kirkland stays in. Lomberg on the left. Anthony Mantha dropped to the right side of line 4. Rooney, healthy scratch. Adam Klapka sent to the American Hockey League. On defense, Anderson with Ball stays together. Uyghur with Braden Pahal. And then Jake Bean and Tyson Berry both re-enter the lineup. They've been healthy scratches recently. And so that is your third pairing this evening. That's a lot of
it
juggling.
Sure is. Okay, so I want to ask you this.
Yes.
Because that is a lot of juggling. What is the biggest thing that jumps out to you?
Biggest thing that jumps out to me?
Yeah, like if I ran into you at a watering hole and said, what's the biggest lineup news?
Mantha.
Okay.
That would be the one for me.
Yeah.
This was Ryan Huska on Wednesday morning, asked about changing things up and why he's going down this road.
We haven't had a lot of I don't feel that there's been a lot of connection offensively the last number of games. So we didn't have the game that we wanted to have in Vegas. That was probably the first time this year where I didn't like our game. Not just portions like special teams we talked about before, but there was, we just didn't like the feel of it. So tonight gives us a chance to try something new and see if we can get a little bit more rhythm within the lineup.
So that's the reasoning. Understandable. I think you can, I guess, get the rationale on that front. One, I mean, they were really, really bad against Vegas. The two losses prior, there were definitely some positives that went into it. Mantha would be the one for me that jumps out the most, Wes. I just, the way it started, I was pretty optimistic, but obviously could not ignore the reputation.
Sure.
Could not ignore what you heard from different people around the league about where, the way this could go. And for me, since what I think is his best game as a member of the Flames in Edmonton, since that Battle of Alberta, it's been a pretty steady decline in terms of impact for Anthony Mantha. He's not shooting it very much. He's not putting pucks on net very much. He has not really been an impact maker.
Yeah.
He's not been overly physical. He has now been dropped to the fourth line. And for a guy the Flames are trying to pump and dump, potentially a guy that at worst they were hoping could come in and potentially turn into an asset prior to the trade deadline. This is not going very well the last four or five games. I'm very comfortable in saying that.
Yeah, and I think what's especially worrisome is, wasn't the last game one of those ones that you just can't really understand how he wasn't raring to go for? I think, you know, back to the fact he's facing the Vegas Golden Knights, his former team, but he's facing a team and a coaching staff that decided he might not be able to help them in the playoffs last year, that they were going to make him a healthy scratch at the most important time of the season. And so I look at a guy in Anthony Mantha who has, by his own admission, been dogged by consistency issues. And I think to myself, well, that consistency issue, like, that should not be a problem tonight against Vegas. This should not be one of those games that you have any worry that Anthony Mantha isn't going to be going full steam. And yet, he was a passenger. Now, a lot of Flames stunk on Monday in Sin City, but he was a guy that, he just didn't appear to have anything to give that night. And that worries me, because that's a night that you're like, okay, You gotta expect Anthony Mantha is gonna have a hell of a game. And you know, the first thing that popped out to me when I saw the lines today, with the exception of I suppose the return of Sam Hanzek, and we thought that was coming, but
we can get into that in just a second.
Yeah, but the first thing that popped out to me was Braden Pahal being promoted, essentially. Well, I shouldn't say essentially, certainly being promoted onto the second pairing alongside Mackenzie Weegar. And I thought Braden Pahal was also rotten in Vegas, but Braden Pahal was rotten in Vegas against his former team because he was trying to do too much. He was trying to overdo it. And I would not accuse Anthony Mantha Monday or any time in these past few games of having, you know, that problem. I don't see a guy who's trying to do too much. I see a guy who, quite frankly, isn't doing enough. And so back to Pahal, I love the button pushing from Ryan Huska on this one. I love the show of faith, like, hey, you're probably coming off your worst game of the season, and we're going to bump you up onto the second pairing. You and I talked about it off air, I think it was, about the potential that they might just flip third pairings. They might just take Hanley and Pahal out tonight.
Hanley and Pahal, yeah.
And put Bean and Barry in. And they did put Bean and Barry in, but they not only left Pahal in, they promoted him. Yeah. And so when I juxtapose that against how they're handling Anthony Mantha and the fact that he is very deserving of this demotion to the fourth line after the past few games he's had, that really jumps out at me. Monday should not have been one of those games that you wonder where Anthony Mantha is.
This, and we'll talk about Pahal in a second as well. This was Ryan Huska when asked about Anthony Mantha being pushed down to line number four as well.
It's not anything about the way he's been playing the game. Like, we talked about changing our lines around after a night that we weren't happy with is one thing, but for him, it's making sure that he always moves his feet and uses his size to his advantage, because he's got a skill set that when he's holding on to and protecting pucks, he's a hard player to play against. So drive the feet, use your size, keep being a good player for us in the power play. Nothing really changes for what we're looking for out of them.
This is what has been frustrating on the Mantha front, because again, we've seen it. That game against Edmonton, he was dominant, and he had the Gordie Howe hat trick against Vancouver and was pretty damn good against Philadelphia. Yeah. And you're like, okay, like this guy, the puck's exploding off his stick, and he has that beautiful goal in Vancouver. He scores the game winner in Edmonton. You're like, damn, okay, like if this is, even if this is not every night, if you can get that Anthony Mantha more often than not, and it's getting, you're getting lots out of Jonathan Huberdeau as well, you're like, okay, well, maybe this can be a positive story all year long.
Sure.
Mantha hasn't been shooting the puck. He is 12th on the team with 23 shot attempts this year. Not even shots. Nazem Kadri has 65 shot attempts. Mackenzie Weegar has 55. Braden Pahal has 25.
What was the math number again?
23.
Ooh.
They were talking about, you know, him targeting 300 shots. And I know that Ryan Huska came out and said, I don't think he's going to get to 300 shots, but it was more just an idea of like, we really want him to have a shot mentality.
Yeah.
Well, that's not what's happening right now. He's on pace for 157 attempts, let alone, and that's including the power play, let alone ones that get on net. And 157 attempts is not the shooting mentality. The guy has got maybe the second or third best shot on the team.
Sure.
Like if the number one shot on the team is Kuzmenko, or if the number one shot on the team, who else would it be? Who else would be up there in that mix in terms of a
Sharon Govich? Sharon, that's for who me.
I knew there was somebody ahead of him. Sharon Govich. Yes. If Sharon Govich is number one, then Kuzmenko and Mantha are number two in terms of the way the puck absolutely blasts off Mantha's stick. 157 attempts. You're not utilizing what your best tool is, or one of your best tools is. At 5-on-5, it's even less impactful. And so I guess that's what, for me, I look at it and say, that's why you can be a little frustrated at what you're seeing from Mantha right now. And they got to find a way to get more out of him. And if demoting him to the fourth line is the way to do it, then this could be successful. Problem is, I mean, he was healthy scratch in the playoffs last year against Vegas. As a member of the Golden Knights against Dallas, and has had this label on him throughout his career. How do you get a guy to kick a label like that? How do you get more consistency out of a guy? I don't know the answer to that question.
Yeah, and I don't know the answer to that either, other than to say that he has been fairly consistent in the past few games, and it's not consistently what you're looking for. And I think that's what's probably alarming for this Flames coaching staff. I think that's why you see him on the fourth line, and I think that's why it wouldn't be a surprise to see the next step, which is a healthy scratching. It's because if he runs really hot and cold, and you know, I've gone back every time I feel like we talk about Anthony Mantha, I go back to what Ryan Huska said during training camp, when he said there's nights that you watch him and you think that guy's the best player on the ice. Well, if you have some nights like that as a coach, I think it makes you a little bit more likely to put up with the stinkers. But Anthony Mantha has simply not had enough of those nights. He was strong in the Edmonton game, as you said. He was very strong in the Vancouver game on opening night.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly didn't mind his game against the Philadelphia Flyers in the season opener, but we're probably talking now about five in a row where you kind of think, what's he doing? What's he bringing? He's not getting shots on net. He's not generating chances at even strength. And so I think this is a real obvious move by Ryan Huska to send him a message. And I honestly wonder, so not to get too you know, deep in the weeds, but what needed to happen for Sam Hanzik to return to the lineup tonight is they needed to send somebody down. And because of the timing, they needed to find a guy who didn't have to go through the 24-hour waiver period, which meant that Adam Klapka was the only option to be.
They could have done Kirkland as well. He still has waiver exemption, but he's been an everyday center for you.
Yeah, and so, you know, I do wonder, given a little bit more time, you know, what they might have come up with. Are they ready to send one of their eight defensemen, and it would be Joel Hanley? You know, are they ready to put him on waivers? Do they consider putting Kevin Rooney on waivers if they think Justin Kirkland has taken that job as the fourth line center? I wonder, with another 24 hours, if we might even be talking about Adam Klapka being in that fourth line spot. But I do think that Anthony Mantha's spot on the power play, and, you know, one of their better scoring chances in Vegas was an Anthony Mantha shot on the second power play. That might keep him in briefly, but they certainly need more out of this player.
Yeah. Want to touch on Pahal, though.
Yeah.
Because I did think that Pahal had a rough night against Vegas, but honestly, that's the only rough night I've really felt he's had this year, kind of your point. I've been quite pleasantly surprised by Pahal.
Absolutely.
I mean, even last year, I was not an advocate of him being in every night. I felt like there was far too much time defending. I felt like he got running around. As much as he plays physical and as much as that's a really good part of his game, I just felt like this is a guy that, like, he's not helping you. He's not moving the needle. And he's not help, like, far too often last year, I felt like opposing teams were able to cycle on Pahal, positioning and ability to kill plays and turn the possession battle the other way just wasn't there. I've seen a significant improvement in that regard from Pahal. His underlyings are very strong, one of the best on the team amongst defensemen. And he has not been, like, he's in a third pairing role, so he's playing against third and fourth lines a lot of the time, but it's not like he's being fed a lot of ozone time and stuff like that. He's been taking on a lot of defensive responsibility. And I just go back to the conversation you and I had with Braden inside the Hot Stove Lounge on a preseason split squad game day. And you asked him, or I don't remember who asked him, but essentially he just said, like, do you see more progression? You're still young. Do you see, like, some growth and development where, you know, we look at you as a third pairing guy, like, could you see yourself more than that? And he basically said, guys, like, being a third pairing right side D in the NHL is a pretty damn good job.
Yeah.
And I'm not Rasmus Anderson. I'm not going to be a big guy in terms of moving pucks and putting up offense and stuff like that. I need to be the best I can be in my role. And I just think he's really leaned into that. And it's given him a promotion into the quote unquote top four, playing on Mackenzie Weegar's right side tonight. But I really appreciate the improvement we've seen and the development we've seen in Pahal's game, because let's not forget, we are still talking about a pretty young guy, especially when we're talking about defensemen. Like, this is not a 30-year-old player. No. There's a 25-year-old defenseman. And
a 25-year-old undrafted defenseman.
Who's played less than 100 NHL games.
Yeah, I only bring that up to kind of illustrate the fact that we're talking about a late bloomer. We're talking about a guy who wasn't on the radar or wasn't considered worthy by the scouts being drafted at 18 or 19. And so you expect that guy to take a little bit longer. And I hope when I was talking about Braden Pahal earlier, I made sense. Like, yeah, I thought he had a rotten game in Vegas, but I thought he had a rotten game for the right reasons. If that's the right way to put it,
I feel what you're saying.
I don't want to be taking a run at him, because I thought he was a guy who probably gave them one of their better efforts in Vegas. It just, you know, there was a really poor turnover in the second period, results in obviously the Mark Stone goal that allowed Vegas to just kind of continue to build on the momentum they had. But I've been really impressed. And I think the fact he's on the second pairing tonight is more of a indictment of some of the other guys. You know, I think we'll probably touch on in a second Daniil Miromanov and what the Flames aren't getting there. I think if, you know, if the coaches were a little bit more satisfied with the way Jake Bean had transitioned to the system, I don't think we'd be talking about a guy who's been healthy scratched a few times. Like, if we went back to training camp, we kind of figured it'd be one of Bean or Miramanov taking that quote unquote last spot in the top four with Ball, Anderson, and Uyghur. And so, you know, Braden Paul, I think, is getting that opportunity tonight in part because of what the other guys haven't done. But good autumn. Braden Paul, even during two of the three games of the losing skid, has been one of the better stories of the season for this Flames team.
I still wonder if there's a way to get Uyghur back on his right side. And I know they've got an overflow of right side D, especially with Tyson Berry as well. There's not really that kind of, I guess, Hanley, but Hanley is not an everyday guy as it stands right now.
Yeah.
Uyghur's the best guy to play his offside, so I think they're going to keep doing it. But I do wonder if at some point, Mackenzie Uyghur's probably played like 30 games on his right side during his time in Calgary. And I still think he's even better on his strong side compared to his weak side. Like, the fact that he has been able to be as good as he is playing on his offside is actually a real credit to him. I just don't know how, with the personnel you've got right now, where you'd be able to do that.
I mean, it would have to be Jake Bean, wouldn't it?
Well, okay, but then you're looking at a third pairing where you're playing two right side
for
guys,
sure,
which is what, you know, had Shillington stayed, I don't think they would be making him a forward. but that's what's happening in Colorado because they have no forwards. If Grishnikov is ready, maybe you go it's Grishnikov and Uyghur or Bean and Uyghur. Mm-hmm. Then you can all of a sudden go Grishnikov and one of your other right side guys.
Yeah.
But because really you've only got Ball and Bean as your two pretty close to everyday left side D.
Sure.
Right now, Uyghur's got to be that left side guy. I just think long term, Uyghur on the right is better for the organization.
Yeah.
When you want to get to being like your contender again, Uyghur on the right, I still think makes the most sense.
And I only suggest Bean and Uyghur as a potential second pairing with the idea of, okay, if we think putting Uyghur on the right helps us get 24 better minutes out of Mackenzie Uyghur, then maybe we're willing to take our lumps with the third pairing that's out there for 12 minutes. That's the kind of way I'm looking at it.
Right.
Is Mackenzie Uyghur as a right-hander a better option on his left side than Tyson Berry or maybe Braden Paul or Miramanov or whatever righty you'd be asking to play the left on the third pair? For sure. Mackenzie Uyghur is the best offside candidate you have by a long ways.
Yep.
But if you believe that you can get better minutes out of a guy who's a bigger piece, then maybe you take your lumps elsewhere.
Yep.
What are you seeing with Miramanov?
Just
because it doesn't come as a surprise that he's out, does it?
No.
And
I really liked him and Uyghur down the stretch last year. I thought that they turned into a pretty good pairing. That just hasn't been able to be recreated. I don't know. Like, Miramanov has kind of, I don't know if he's thinking too much, but like the offensive stuff the Flames are really excited about has not been on display.
Yeah.
Defensively, there's been too many times where he's been out of position and caught. I'm not seeing much right now, which is why I think he has now found himself in that category of, you might be in the press box here and there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess not knowing a ton about the player when he arrived in Calgary, one of the most fascinating things for me going into training camp this year was how a full summer of training for a guy who was coming off a major knee injury, like how that might look with his skating. Because while I had stretches that I certainly liked him with Mackenzie Uyghur toward the end of last year, I wondered how much the skating would hold him back. And I was, I suppose, hoping to see more improvement in that into training camp. Like I wonder about Miramanov's ability to consistently play the pace that this Flames team wants to play. And I wonder kind of what the long-term fit is. He's going to get more opportunities with Mackenzie Weegar because, as we just talked about, there's not an obvious fit there. But he's been a guy who has not necessarily seized that opportunity so far, that's for sure.
Sam Hanzek returns too, and right onto the Backlund line, which is an interesting opportunity for him. Curious as to how that plays itself out.
Me too. I thought Sam Hanzek's next game would be in the AHL, and not as a knock on him, but I thought he played four games before getting hurt. Is that he was hurt hurt in the Chicago game, and so I kind of thought to myself, okay, you know, he found out in those first four how difficult of a league it is to play in, and I didn't think he looked overwhelmed, but he certainly wasn't able to assert himself the way he had been in the preseason. No surprise for a 19-year-old, but I thought, you know, when he comes back, I figured they'd send him to the Wranglers for a couple games, get his feet back under him. Now, he wasn't out as long as I wondered if he might be, but I love the spot in the lineup for him.
Yep.
I love the chance they're giving him for success tonight, playing alongside a guy, Sam Hanzak, in his fifth game, Michael Backlund in his 1,000th. Blake Coleman's got to be in the 500 somewhere.
Good company.
Pretty comfy spot for a rookie.
This hour of Flames Talk underway with Wes Gilbertson of Post Media. My name is Pat Steinberg. We're coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Flames Talk is live on Calgary's Hockey Station, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Wednesday edition of the program continues. Pat Steinberg along with you. It's time to spin you around the Pacific Division. We've got news out of the provincial capital with Connor McDavid and a whole lot more. It's time to say hello to our Pacific Division insider. Jonathan Davis joins us now from NHL Network and VSiN Sports on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Hello, JD. How are we doing?
We're doing fine, Pat. We are on our way to Crypto for the game tonight and dealing with that fine L.A. traffic.
You love L.A. traffic. Makes you want to utter four-letter words, doesn't it?
Well, you know, not Pat. I'm talking to you. Really, how bad can it be, right?
That's true.
And I'll tell you, it's not as bad as Toronto traffic. I will tell you that.
Okay, and you have lived in Toronto for a good chunk of your life as well, so you would know.
I go back once a year, and it is hellacious.
And that's saying something. Okay, well, we will get to that game at Crypto.com in just a second. Good Pacific Division battle on this Wednesday night. But let's start in Vancouver because it is the Hughes Bowl on Wednesday night. Always fun to see Quinn, Jack, and Luke play in the same game. And that is what's happening on Wednesday night. Late start in Vancouver. And the two Devils Hughes are visiting Quinn and the Canucks.
Yeah, you know, big night for your network TV-wise, with that being the back end of the doubleheader. It's one that the New Jersey boys have owned 6-1, and I think that the last game that they played was the first time that Quinn was on the winning end, and I think it's the first time that Quinn's ever been on the winning end of any game that he's played against Jack from the time that Jack was with the development team, the U.S. development team. So. One for Quinn. Fun games to watch, always high scoring. You got two teams that, New Jersey has been kind of meh. I mean, they've just been trying to figure it out. Your former goalie was supposed to come in and be the savior, and it's been kind of rough sledding for Markstrom and Jake Allen. They're feeling good. New Jersey, coming off a win against Anaheim, but that's really no great shakes. Nothing to get too excited about. But this is a game where Jack has loved playing against his brother in the Canucks. He's got 7 goals and 6 assists in 7 games against Vancouver. So and I know for Rick Tocchet, he wasn't very happy about that game against Carolina. He didn't really play very well, and thanks to that adventure move. Did you watch that game, Pat, the Carolina-Vancouver game?
I saw highlights only. It was going on while the Flames were playing.
Ah, yes. Well, I'm sure you saw the Kachekov play that led to the tying goal. He decided that it's like, what a gift. Like, dude, stay in the net.
Well, because Kachetkov had played in Calgary a few nights prior, and just watching him live, you're like, boy, this guy loves his aggressive poke checks, and he's got a little Mike Smith in him. He likes to go wandering with that puck. He is extremely confident with it.
Well, he is, and he actually, in that game, if I remember, in the final minute, I mean, he had that nice clear around the glass that led to the empty net goal, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, that's right. He did. And it kind of kicked off the boards and went to.
Yeah,
absolutely. That is very, very true. He's very good at it. But, you know, when you're very good at it and have a lot of confidence, you know, sometimes you might get burnt, right?
Yeah, and I know we digress, but are we not all like, I mean, hockey fans, I think, are waiting for Kachekov and Bennington to drop the gloves. Are we not?
That would be good.
That's got to happen.
I sure did like Kachetkov and Brady Kachuk going toe-to-toe and jawing at one another last season as well. Speaking of goalies, what are we seeing from Kevin Lankinen right now in Vancouver?
I mean, he's been their MVP. The goals against is just over two, and the save percentage is in the mid-nines, and the numbers don't lie. I mean, sometimes – the numbers really don't always tell the story. He's been very good. He's gotten, he's 4-0-2. So that means he's earned points in all six games for the Canucks. And that allows the Demko, healing process physically and mentally just to take even longer. As long as he's keeping you in games, then, hey, it's, so you've got, 10 out of a possible 12 points. That's huge for Vancouver. Yep. It's worked out really well for him.
Yeah, really has helped solidify things in Vancouver as well. Okay, to where you are on your way to right now, Crypto.com Arena, big Pacific Division showdown in Tinseltown for the Kings and Vegas Golden Knights. Let's start with Los Angeles. What can you explain to us the Kevin Fiala situation and kind of the last, 48 hours or so for Kevin Fiala and the Kings?
Well, I will use a quote from Nick Cousins to Kevin Fiala on the ice in a game against the Ottawa Senators, that 8-7 game earlier in the year, when he was overheard saying to Fiala, "You're selfish." And that's Kevin Fiala. And it's something that, Drew Doughty last year and Todd McClellan last year never used Fiala by name, but we all had the sense that that's who they were referring to. The game before, so he gets scratched for missing a team meeting yesterday in San Jose. The game before, he has the no movement clause from the bench for his final shift of the second period and the entire third period, after taking two offensive zone penalties, one during a Kings power play. The game before, he took a dumb penalty with the net empty and ended up leading to a goal, if I remember correctly, for Utah, or maybe it was the San Jose game. And it's finally missing the team meeting, enough's enough. So, Fiala is a skilled player, but there's so much risk and reward to his game. And the thing is, Pat, he's their highest paid forward this year at $7.75. I mean, it's crazy. So, I was surprised that Jim Hiller went public before the game and let everybody know why Fiala wasn't playing. That is out of character for this organization. But I guess, they just kind of felt enough's enough.
It's funny you talk about highest paid forward, so on and so forth. It's it has not been a great year early on for Anze Kopitar, has it?
It hasn't. I mean, it was all smiles after game number one. He gets the hat trick against Buffalo in a game that the Kings had no business winning. But since then, Pat, he's got six shots on goal. Three came in the game against Toronto on that road trip. He has not scored a goal since that game, and Pat looks slow. like, I don't want to say that Father Time is caught up with him, but I hope there's some sort of injury, because if it's not, it's definitely a cause for concern. And last night he was a minus three in that San Jose game, and that San Jose game last night, there's no excuse. Like, that's a game that lacks, to me, leadership from the top down. And I mean, management, coaches, players, and a lot of that has to square right on the captain. It's a 1-1 game last night, Pat, going to the third period. It should never be 1-1 if you're L.A. playing against San Jose. And if I hear Jim Hiller say it's tough to win in this league, it's tough to win when you got a bad team.
Mm-hmm.
They had two shots on goal in the third period last night. And when San Jose took the first lead of the game at 2-1 in the third, the shots were 6-0 San Jose. That's not okay. It's unacceptable. And if they lose tonight against Vegas, all of a sudden their next game against Chicago on the weekend, I think, I don't want to say must win, but you can't lose, you know, you can't lose to Chicago and San Jose this early in the season. Well, you should never lose to them. They shouldn't be losing to them. But you can't lose to them as two of your first, you know, half dozen losses. And they're lucky, actually, Pat, that they beat San Jose in L.A. about a week ago. They were a goalpost away from being tied and having that game go to overtime.
Yeah. Okay. And as you mentioned, tough game against Vegas on Wednesday night. A Golden Knights team that has yet to win on the road. So they're on the road at Crypto.com. But, boy, this has been a very balanced Vegas team in the early going, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, 17 players with goals and 20 players with at least a point. That's pretty balanced. And, yeah, I mean, the three games on the road were very disconcerting because they had leads in all those games. And they blew, or at least they blew six leads on that three-game road trip and losing, you know, to Washington, Tampa, and Florida. Now, look, it's a different and much better and improved team with the return of William Karlsson, because now that, you know, that brings them back to being four deep, really at center, with Eichel, with Hurdle, with Karlsson, and you can put Nick Waugh, you know, in the fourth spot if you want. So they, yeah, you know, so now they're back to where they wanted to be when the season started, for the most part. You know, obviously the Stone line, Stone, Eichel, and Barbashev has arguably been, at least statistically, you know, the best line in the NHL. You know, Stone just went 1 point out of the scoring race. I don't see that, you know, staying for the course of the season. No reason to think so. But right now that line is as hot as it gets.
Well, and there's also the Pavel Dorofeev story as well. Hey, he's talk about taking advantage of an opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, they say what? One man's injury is another person's opportunity. And that's what's happened with Dorofeev. You know, he with Victor Olofsson going down, and that was a tough one because Olofsson, you know, in his, you know, first couple of games had already scored or two or three goals, and he's got that deadly shot that just, you know, it goes through goalies. And then Dorofeev fills in, plays on the second line with Hurdle, gets number one power play time, and he's fully taking advantage of it. And it's really helped this Golden Knights team, because early on, beginning of the year, I mean, they were winning, but everything was coming from the top line. But you're getting great play. You're getting good play from Dorofeev. You know, Tanner Pearson, who came to this team on a PTO, has fit right in and has earned a spot and has been very effective. And it's not always scoring a goal, but it's taking the eyes away from a goalie. I mean, Pat, I can think of two or three instances of watching Golden Knights games where there's Pearson, you know, parked right in front of the net. Didn't get an assist on the play, at least on the stat sheet, but definitely got an assist because he took the eyes away from the goalie. So we're seeing a lot of good things. And, you know, I will say Samsonov is, you know, in the few starts that he's gotten, I mean, he's been the better of the two goalies between him and Aiden Hill. You know, Sean Burke, the goaltending coach, has done a very good job with Samsonov. You know, unlike in Toronto, you know, he's got a far better blue line core in front of him. So, you know, he doesn't have to, you know, he has to just make that first save. I think the quality of chances that he faces are far, you know, not as great as if they were in Toronto. It's worked out well for Samsonov so far in Vegas. Aiden Hill gets the start tonight.
We're talking to Jonathan Davis, VSiN Sports and NHL Network. He's our Pacific Division insider. The Oilers probably get some good news on the Connor McDavid front, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, okay, so 2 to 3 weeks, so we're not hearing months or a month, so that's definitely encouraging for the Oilers. And so now it's time for, look, Leon is going to have to take a bigger responsibility, but look, a lot falls on guys. Zach Hyman still doesn't have a goal. Victor Arvidsson doesn't have a goal. I think when you watch the Oilers, one of the concerns coming into the year, which is, I think, has remained true or stayed true, is what, their blue line, once you get past Bouchard and Ekholm, doesn't look great. Like, they need some help for Darnell Nurse, or Darnell Nurse needs some help for himself. I mean, it's Nurse and it's Stetcher, or it's, Ty Emberson. Just not, they didn't replace the guys that they lost. So, it's definitely tough sledding. And then the other thing, for Edmonton is, they're not as fast as they were a year ago. And, when you think about the guys that they lost, whether, Fogle and McLeod and Holloway, I'm not talking about guys that, big goal scorers, but, guys that help the penalty kill, guys that could play, in your bottom six and just at least hold court, keep things at zero pretty much. That's the one downside to the moves that they made. We were all excited, or many Oilers fans were excited about potentially what Skinner and Arvidsson could bring goal scoring wise, but they're definitely not as fast a team.
And we will wrap it up by looking in on the Anaheim Ducks and perhaps the best goaltender in the division in the early stages of the season.
Well, is there an argument on your end on that one?
He's been pretty good. We're talking about Lucas Dostal. He's been really good.
I mean, Pat, I look at two games already this year. You had the game against Colorado where he stopped 45 of 49. In a game that they're outshot 49-19, they had no business getting a point that night if not for Dostal. And I felt so bad for him. I think it was Nathan MacKinnon scored the game winner, and it just trickled past him. And then last night against the Islanders, he stopped another game where he stopped over 40 shots. They get the win this time. He's been fantastic. And we saw this. Ducks fans, saw this last year as well. So it's not something new for Ducks fans, but he's a name that, I'm telling you, Anaheim comes to town when they play Calgary, he definitely has the ability to steal a point because, this Anaheim team is challenged. Hey, I know we got to wrap things up here, but one thing I do want to mention from a betting standpoint, tonight there's a trend going on where a team like Calgary coming off being shut out, first period over is 13-2, the full game going over is 11-4.
So you're saying take the over on Calgary goals tonight, or just overall goals?
No. Take the over.
But on the over on the total, okay.
Over 1.5 goals in the first period and over for the full game.
Okay. All right. I might go do that because I trust you, JD.
That may be your first mistake.
Yeah, don't steal
your
own.
You should go do it. I mean, it's 13-2. I mean, it's pretty good. It's pretty good percentage.
I'm on my app right now doing it, so I'll let you know how it goes.
Well, you don't have to let me know. I'll know. I'll be watching.
That's true. You'll know. Good stuff, buddy. We'll talk again next week. Appreciate it as always, JD.
All right, bud. Take care.
Jonathan Davis is our Pacific Division insider. He joins us on Wednesdays here on Flames Talk, and he joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline using the same secret recipe since 1975 at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. Enjoying the game at home? Call for pickup or delivery at 403-248-3344. As we start to wrap up this hour on Flames Talk, Wes Gilbertson is on Twitter at Wes Gilbertson. We will talk to you on Thursday, pal.
Looking forward to it.
Cam Hughes, Shan Vergy, our producers this hour, and this hour has been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.